What's up, everybody, and welcome to the very first, the premiere edition of The 10th, the brand new podcast of the African American Golfers Digest. I am your host, Michael Williams, and it is an honor for me to be sitting here in front of this microphone representing what I think is one of the very finest publications in the golf industry, in the published industry overall worldwide. It is stellar, and it is an honor, as I say, to be representing this group of people. I want to thank DeBert Cook and James Beatty, the leadership of that organization, for choosing me to open this new horizon as far as African American Golfers Digest. It's something that I love to do. It brings together two of the things I love to do, which is to talk to people on the air and to do anything that's involved with golf. And brother, this is just, it's just a feel-good situation for me. It's a no-lose situation. The organization, the publication, has really done some important work, both in bringing news about the African-American community and its golf accomplishments that other publications choose not to. And I can say that some of these publications absolutely do know. Some will say that, well, they don't have access to this information. They don't know. Well, they know. They just choose not to actually put this information out there. And so the African American Digest serves as a critical resource for making sure that people have access to the knowledge about their role in the game, the role of the African American community in this game as a business, as a resource, as an entertainment resource, so that we know who we are and what we're doing. I think it's a critically important function that's being done with distinction by the leadership of African American Golfers Digest. What do we want to do in the tent? We want to educate. We want to bring you information that you didn't have access to before, bring topics to the forefront. And if those topics are already at the forefront, we want to endeavor to get a little deeper into them and give you some knowledge and maybe a perspective that you didn't have before. We want to educate. We want to inform, give you knowledge about events, about people, about things that are going on in communities around the country and around the world, for that matter. Give you access to resources that will help you broaden your horizons and maybe get to some places that you haven't gotten to before and give you a reason to do so. And we, of course, want to entertain. We want to bring the best guests, the best minds, the most interesting people to talk to you and bring you their perspective, not only on golf, but on those things, anything that's important to them and their life and what they're doing, their work, their hobbies, their interests, their service, anything that they're doing, I think is going to be interesting to them, is going to be interesting to us. So I'm just excited about doing this. You all know me. A lot of you know me. I've been in and around the golf business for 20 years. I started off in the operations team at the golf courses in Washington, D.C., the National Park Service golf courses, historic Langston Golf Course, East Potomac Golf Course, Rock Creek Golf Course. I was on the management team of those great properties for almost a decade. That's how I got into the game and then gradually moved into the media world. In that time, I have been privileged to interview some of the greatest golfers in the history of the game. Yes, I've sat down and talked to Tiger. I've talked to Charlie Sifford. I've talked to Jim Thorpe. I've talked to Gary Player. I've talked to Lee Trevino, Phil Mickelson, and on and on and on. The list goes too long for us to list right here. That's not even necessary because it's not the point. I've had the opportunity to bring their perspective to you, and that's been a pleasure. I've also had an opportunity to go to some of the great golf properties in the world, in Ireland, in Scotland, in Mexico. I've been to over 30 countries in the world to play golf. And I don't say that to brag. I say because it's a privilege and to say something that probably wouldn't have happened other than being involved directly with the golf industry. It's a great thing to be able to cover a game that is played all over the world by people all over the world and be able to cover it and give my perspective on it. Yes, I've received some accolades from the PGA of America, from the National Association of Black Journalists, from the Golf Writers Association of America, and I'm humbled by the fact that they recognize my work and think that it is something of worth that should be noted in the golf industry. But my continued mission is to bring the game to more people and to bring more enjoyment of the game to the people who are already in. And in that, there is a shared mission with African American Golf Digest, their leadership, and me. We all want to bring more of what's good to more of you. So please enjoy this endeavor. Please give us your feedback. Go to AfricanAmericanGolfersDigest.com. You'll have an opportunity to find an email there, email address where you can send in your thoughts. Hit us up on social media, on our channels there, and let us know what you think. But we're going to do our very best for you, and we hope that you take something away from it. And if we're doing it right, that you'll be able to give something back to it. So again, it's an honor and a privilege to get this party started here in the tent. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and have our first guest, the all-time great NBA guard and pretty good golfer, Mr. Byron Scott. We'll be right back. The 10, Michael Williams. Get your copy now of the latest edition of African American Golfers Digest in print or digital. It features Alabama's Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail, Chase Johnson's stellar golf season, Gordon Brown Sr.'s big day, Detroit's Cass Tech Girls Making History, Morehouse and Drew Charter School's Bridgestone Golf Day, plus information on events, player resources, and more. Stay informed by visiting our website and subscribing to the magazine at AfricanAmericanGolfersDigest.com. That's AfricanAmericanGolfersDigest.com. Welcome back to the 10th. I don't know. I'm excited. I'm pumped. And I'll tell you this. This is our first guest coming up right now. And I will say that when I was asked to come and do this, I like immediately said yes, right? But I also had a list of people who I wanted to come on the show as a first guest. And I'm telling you, I feel so good that the name that I had right at the top of the list, and I mean right at the top of the list, no garbage. I mean, this was the name at the top of the list, is here with me today as the very first special guest inside the tent. I want you to welcome a man who is one of the great NBA guards of his era, one of my favorite players of all time. He has an incredible resume on the court and a pretty good one off the court too. Please welcome my good friend, Byron Scott. B, welcome to the tent, my brother.
Man, thank you so much for the introduction, Mike. It's always good to talk to you, my brother. It's been too long, and I'm looking forward to this. I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. I mean, you're the first one inside the tent. The tent's all fresh. You know when you move into an apartment that's just been built? You can move into an apartment. And I remember when I was first growing up, you move into these apartments that, you know, a lot of people lived in before, and they may have the fresh coat of paint and everything, but you can tell, like, all the gouges in the counter and, you know, the cabinets all dinged up and whatnot. But, you know, when you move into that new apartment, that condo that's just been built, it's got like that smell that's in there, and everything is fresh and shiny. And you still like some things, you even find like a little label you still have to peel. Oh, this had never been used. The microwave had to peel the plastic over the microwave. The tent is fresh, man. We still got fresh everything. Okay, it's got that new tent smell, right?
I feel you. I love that smell too. Matter of fact,
It's a beautiful thing, man. It really is. And like you said, it's been too long because we met through golf. And I believe it was in Mexico. Danzante Bay, if I'm not mistaken, right? Is where we first played.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was a course, man. That's one of my 10 favorite courses in the world. It doesn't get a lot of press like a lot of the others. TPC Danzante Bay, right in Laredo, right halfway down the peninsula. You know it better than I have. You've been there half dozen times. What is that course like? Tell us about that one.
Yeah, it's right up the Sea of Cortez, and you're right. I mean, it is a hidden gem. It is one of the best courses I've played, and like you, Michael, I played them all. I played a bunch of them, and I mean, Owen Perry, who is the owner of the Sante Bay, and the villas down there, did a fabulous job of getting this beautiful course. And you have a little bit of everything when you go down there and you play the Sante Bay. You got ocean views. You got desert views, you got mountain views. I mean, it is really a spectacular golf course. And you got about five different tee sets, so you can make it as hard as you want to,
right?
You know, depending on your skill level. But it is one of my favorite, you know, it just kind of like you just said, Michael, it is in my top 10 of my favorite courses. And like you said, I'm back there almost every 3 or 4 months playing golf. And, you know, I'm missing out this year because normally I'm there in March, around my birthday. But because of the knee surgery that I had 6 weeks ago, I'm going to have to make it like May when I go back. But I'm looking forward to making that trip again.
Okay, so if it's in May, then maybe I may make it with you in May. So we can do that. And by the way, do we need to sing happy birthday here? When's your birthday?
Birthday's the 28th, man. And, you know, I'll be a big 6'3", you know, it's going to be a quiet one. Me and the wife are just going to have dinner together because I told her, I said, baby, even though right now, you know, it's great to celebrate, you know, every birthday, but
yes,
you know, 60 to 65 is special. You know, those are kind of the special ones. This one is just going to be an intimate one. But yeah, in May, I think we're going to go back out there. And I got some other buddies that, you know, they've been out there and they love the Sante Bay as well. So I'm going to let you know. I'm like, Michael, these are the dates we're going, man. Hopefully you can join us and we would have a really good foursome with the other two buddies of mine.
I'm not even playing, man. I want to go play that golf course because, I mean, and for those who are listening to this and don't know it, go Google it now. Danzante Bay the TPC at Danzante Bay, because their par three, is it 17, the par three right there?
Yes, the signature hole, yes.
Let me tell you something. There are a lot of talk about 17 at Sawgrass, right? That's the par three. Mm-hmm. Everybody talks about Island Green, blah, blah, blah. Okay, it's all good, right? And they play the players there, and that's fine. That par three, I don't think that there's a better par three in the world. For a look, for a challenge, for everything that you would want it to be, I would say that's on my Rushmore of par threes right now in the world.
Oh, I agree. And it's kind of like the one at Sawgrass, like the Island Green, because if you don't hit the green, you pretty much are gone.
Well, you're in the ocean.
you're in the ocean, or you're in the mountains if you're short. If you're long, you're in the ocean. You got a little bit of a bailout on the left side if you hit it about pin high where you can be on some grass.
Yeah.
But it is obviously, like you said, when you're standing on that tee box, it is one of the most beautiful par threes you'll ever see in your lifetime. And I've been blessed, Michael. I have never come away on that hole as of yet with less than par. So I've been very lucky on that hole.
You got to be kidding. Really? You never made bogey on that hole?
I've never made bogey. I've had pars and birdies on that hole. For some reason, that hole just, I don't know, it just suits me, I guess. Or, you know, I mean, it's just one of those holes. That's my hole. That's my luckiest hole, seems like, on Desante Bay, is that 17 Island Green.
So you messed up now because you could have got a bet from anybody listening. And now everybody now is going to be like, hey, man, just like keep your wallet in your villa because, you know, the man's never made a bogey on that hole. Then, all right, you know who he is, okay? You already know.
Oh, man. Like I said, I've been lucky on that hole.
Okay. Tell me, when did you start playing golf, though? Because I know you had a great career in basketball with the Lakers, playing the Showtime Lakers. Did you get started as a youth in college while you were playing in the NBA? When did you first come to golf?
Yeah, I was playing in the NBA, and I got started. It's a crazy story. I was in Phoenix. Our whole team was in Phoenix. We were on the bus. We were getting ready to play the Phoenix Suns. We were going to practice that morning, and James Worthy came on the bus in golf attire. And I was like, where the hell you been? And we were staying at the Arizona Biltmore in Scottsdale, which they have a golf course.
Yes.
And came on, and he was like, "Man, I just finished playing 9 holes." I was like, "Man, you got to be crazy. Our bus is at 9:30. You must have had to get up at 6 o'clock or something in the morning." He's like, "Yep." And I was like, "You crazy?" He said, "Well, when this series is over, I'm gonna take you to the driving range." And he took me to the driving range when the series is over. Man, I hit one or two good shots, and I've been hooked ever since. And at that time, I was 32. So that was 30 years ago
Wow.
when I first picked up a golf club, and I've been hooked ever since. And it's all because of James Worthy.
It's all because of James. Does he know? Do you still play with him?
Oh yeah, he knows, and he said, "Yeah, for about 3 years, I was whooping your butt, and ever since then, you've been kicking my butt." So, yeah, he got me involved in it, and now he can't beat me.
Now this I want to see, because James, I mean James again, I mean so many great players. We'll come back to your NBA career in a minute, man. But those guys, the Showtime Lakers, just that was a whole thing. But to be able to play with James, did any of the other players on that team play?
Let me see. Nope. Magic doesn't play. Coop is starting to try to pick it up. So I've been with him a couple of times in golf tournaments. But no, that's really about it. None of the other guys really play. So it's really a lot of times when I play, it's me and James. And then we played with some of the younger Lakers back in the day, like Derek Fisher, who played, Meta World Peace, who plays, so we got a couple of guys that's after us that play with the Laker organization that play that we get out with every now and then.
Okay, I have to stop you here. Okay, this is a 20-second timeout, like they say. Meta World Peace play golf?
Yeah. And I mean, he took it up, but he's just started. I mean, it's been probably now 2 years, 2.5 years that he started.
Okay, I got to
and
stop you again because I'm just not sure my headphones are working properly. Metal World Peace play golf.
Yes.
Okay.
He plays golf. He started playing about 2.5 years ago, 3 years maybe at the most. And yeah, he's the same way. He's addicted to the game now. Yeah, I
Now,
know it's hard
okay.
to imagine, right?
No, you know what? Okay, so I used to have a bucket list of courses. Now, here's the sound of me tearing up my bucket list of courses because all I want to do is play golf with that guy. That's all I
Oh,
want to do.
man.
Okay, we got to make
Yeah,
that happen.
he's
I need to
fun.
play with him.
Yeah, you come down this way to LA. We'll try to make that happen. That's for sure.
Okay. I'm bringing cameras. That's a 30 for 30 right there. Okay, we're doing that. Okay, we're making that happen. So you started playing golf then and been playing consistently. And I guess when you were out on the road, did you like sort of carve out time to play? Like, oh, we're going to New York. I need to carve out time to get out to Long Island and play Bethpage. Or how did you manage your golf habit with your career at that time?
Well, at that time, I mean, I wouldn't play golf during the season. It was all about, my craft and basketball, trying to win the
Gotcha.
championship.
Yes,
So,
sir.
never played during the season, just during the off season. And then until I got into coaching, when my basketball career was over, I still wouldn't play during the season. I wouldn't take my, I take that back. I wouldn't take my clubs or anything like that on the road. But during the season, I would play every now and then, with some of my coaches, my assistant coaches and things of that nature. But really, really didn't start playing on a regular basis until I was done with coaching. And then it was like, okay, 2 or 3 times a week I'm playing. The other 2 or 3 times a week I'm hitting golf balls and practicing. So, I've kept that up for probably the past 10 years of being very loyal and to the game and trying to get my handicap as low as possible and, trying to beat the brakes off all my buddies.
Yeah, I know. And really, isn't that what it's all about?
That's Michael. That you know what? It's all about the bragging rights of being able to beat all your friends, and that to me, that's the most fun. It ain't even about money and nothing like that. We don't we bet for very little money, but it's all about if I win, I don't even care about the money. It's just the fact that I beat you. That's what I wanna, remember. So yeah, it's all about just beating your buddies. That's all.
That is all about that. I told my boy one of my great joys in life is when my boy hits an errant shot, and I was like, "You're gonna be all right, man. don't worry about it. You're all right." And inside, I'm like, "Blah."
I know that feeling. I know that feeling.
You're so sorry. It's like,
Yeah, I do know that feeling.
It's all about them suffering. You know, I get that. Your good friends and watching them suffer on the course. So you mentioned the handicap. I wasn't even going to bring up the handicap, but what number is it now, the handicap level?
Well, and it got down before this injury to a 4.
What?
Yeah, so I mean, like I said, I was playing really well. Jeez. Hitting the ball great, and now it's probably going to be a 10 when I get back. I mean, I'm going to have to, you know, work my way back up. You know, I'm trying to remember everything that I was doing at that particular time when I was hitting it so well. You know, so I'm looking forward to getting back into that, you know, into that practice mode and that game mode. But I think it's going to take me a little while to get back down to that 4 legitimately. But we'll see. I'm going to have fun doing, you know, in the process of doing it, I'm going to have fun, believe me.
I'm glad I asked, because I'm keeping my wallet back in the villa, too. what's the strength of your game? I know you're an athlete. All the athletes hit it a long way. But what's the real strength of your game?
Yeah, the strength of my game is off the tee. You know, my driver is probably my best club. And then, you know, from that point, it's my putter. You know, so my iron game was getting really good. And my short game was getting really good. You know, but my strength of my game is off the tee, you know, and putting.
Well, that sounds like somebody who can play the game, because if you can get it out there and get it down, then it's a fairly simple game, actually.
Yeah, a lot easier, that's for sure.
Yeah, they say a lot easier from the fairway, and short and crooked is no way to go through life. Ask anybody.
Yeah.
We are talking with the great Byron Scott here in the tent. Michael Williams, your host, African American Golfers Digest. First episode. I'm so excited still. Who's the best basketball playing golfer that you know of besides yourself?
Well, I think the best one that I know of, and I had the pleasure playing with this young man when he was coming out of college, because he was in New Orleans working out with Chris Paul, and his name is Steph Curry.
Yeah, yeah, he's
and
a stick.
Yeah, Steph can play. I mean, he could play then, and he, you know, he told me that his dad got him started early, and you could see it, you know, by his swing and everything. But yes, Steph is probably the best NBA player that I've played with in a long time.
Yeah, there's something about people who have a knack for repetitive motion that are good. You see the Major League Baseball pitchers, the NFL kickers. And guys who have like that repetitive stroke jump shot, there's something about that repetitive thing that allows them to be good in golf, where that repetitive thing is also so important, right?
Oh, absolutely. I, like you said, as athletes, the one thing that we do, and it doesn't matter what sport it is, you know, you got that competitive nature. The one thing that we do is we will work at it,
yeah.
You know, and we'll own it, you know. So we can't all swing like Rory McIlroy or Tiger Woods and guys like that, but we'll find our swing and we'll stick with it and we'll own it. And we'll make that swing the best swing we can possibly, you know, do at that time. So, yeah, that's the great thing about being an athlete, is that the fact that, you know, we know when we pick up something like golf and how addicting this game could be. The one thing that we're going to do is put in time to be as, you know, be as good as we can be at it.
You know, I think you really said something there that's really instructive for the audience. It's like, because you look at all these things, and you'll see people get the golf magazines, the different golf magazines they'll have, or online even. You can find this swing and that swing. They're looking for tips for looking at somebody. But at some point, you have to find – you can't try to perfect that guy's swing. You have to perfect your swing. You have to find it first and then polish it, right? And
Absolutely.
Did you find that was the case with your basketball game too? Like, you had to find your game and then perfect that, no doubt.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of these guys now, you know, basketball-wise, which is understandable, because if you got guys that are just really good at basketball and they look at everybody else in the league and they can steal certain movement and certain things from that guy. I mean, Chris Paul was great at, you know, I would see him do something. And he was like, yeah, coach, I got that from such and such. And he would implement it into his game.
Right.
You know what I mean? So they would, you know, do that. But when you in golf, I mean, like I said, I would love to swing like Rory McIlroy. I think he has the best swing in golf, you know, and that's just my opinion. I would love to swing like him.
I think objectively that's true. I mean, it is a work of art.
You know what I mean? But Michael, I can't swing like him. He is, you know, 30 years old. I'm 60. I can't swing like him. So I had to find myself, and this happened to me about 5 or 6 years ago, where I was, just like you said, I'm looking at every commercial on how to swing better, how to do this, how to do this. And I finally had to get to the point where I said, you know what? This is my swing, and this is, you know, I can only swing like this, and I'm gonna have to just own it, and I'm gonna just have to hone it to make it the best swing possible for me.
Yeah,
and that's what I've done over the last 5 years. I stopped taking lessons and all that stuff. I just like, look, this is my swing, and this is what it's gonna be. But if I can perfect it, then I'm gonna be able to play this game for a long time and still be a single digit handicapper.
I love it. I think that's some of the best instructional advice I've ever had in all the years I've been broadcasting, podcasting, all of those things. Like, you need to find your swing and then perfect it instead of trying to perfect somebody else's thing.
Absolutely. Find it and then own it.
I mean,
it's easier said than done, but I got a buddy of mine. If you saw him swing a golf club, Michael, you would go, oh my God, this guy can't, but he's a 600 cap. But you would never try to duplicate his swing. But he's owned that swing ever since I've known him. And it took me a while to say, you know what? Steven has done this. You know, he's never tried to, you know, emulate anybody else's swing. That's his swing. And it took me a while to realize, you know what? I got to do the same thing. I just got to own my swing. So, yeah, for all the guys out there that listen, you're not going to swing like Rory or Justin or you know, some of these other great golfers. You can name a bunch of them, Justin Thomas, all guys. You're not going to swing like them. Scottie Scheffler. You know, you're not, but own it. You know, find your swing and own it. That's all I can say.
I love that. That's spoken like a true athlete. Like, find your thing and then get it done from there. Make that the best it can possibly be. Push that over the finish line. That's why. See, this is validation. Do you all understand why I had this man on the show now? Okay, rest y'all in the tent. Do you understand? Okay, are you getting this? All right, pay attention. My God. Blow through some quick questions, man, before I let you go. So your favorite golf course, we talked about one of your favorites, Dante Bay. Oh, is there a single favorite or a few other favorites that that you love to play?
I think there's two other ones that come to mind right away when you mention favorite golf course. One is the Lotion, which is in Arkansas, which is an unbelievable golf course. A lot of people might not know about it either. But my boy Daryl Walker, who's a member there, hooked me up to that course years ago, and it was just fantastic. And then the other one, obviously, is Pebble. I mean, I just love Pebble. Yeah. You know, going up to play Pebble is just, you know, sometimes you get lost just standing on the tee, looking at the water and looking at the surroundings, and you forgot you're there to play golf. But those are two of my favorite, along with DeSante Bay. And then, you know, Riviera right here in Los Angeles. I mean, not a stench of water on this course, but it is it is just a spectacular golf course. So those four are just four that right on top of my head, Michael, that I would say are four of my favorite golf courses.
Okay, you heard of HBCUs? This is like HBU, like hook a brother up. Okay, I need to get on Riviera, man. I've been wanting to play Riviera for so long, just watching that course, because I can imagine exactly how I want to hit certain shots when you want to do that, you know, 10, 18. I know what I want to do, right? So, okay, we put a pin in.
I got a good hook up there. So when you come, let me know, and we can definitely go play it.
Okay, you had me at hello. Let's see, favorite courses. Oh, you going to Augusta? You going to be at the Masters this year?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to be able to make it down there, and that's on my bucket list of just making it and playing that course one of these days.
Yeah.
Won't make it this year because of the knee, but other than that, y'all, I'm looking forward to 2025, hopefully, of going down there and being a spectator.
And I'll see you down there, because I'm down there every year. So
that sounds good.
You let me know so we can have, like, you know, well, we'll do what we do.
We'll find
that's the show. You got a prediction for a winner at Augusta? Because, you know, all the live players are going to be there. John Rahm's coming back. Brooks Koepka's going to be there. I guess DJ's going to be all the Saudi boys are going to be there. So you got a prediction for that?
You know what? I'm so big on Rory right now, and I know he's going through a little something, but each week I think he's really been getting himself prepared for the Masters. And I thought The players, you know, he was playing well, made some mistakes, obviously hit some balls in the water, but I think his swing is really starting to come. But the guy I would not bet against is Scottie Scheffler.
Right.
I just think Scottie's game right now is just, you know, tigerish. You know, nobody right now I think can really hang with him if his game is on. His iron play is just unbelievable. So I'm going with Rory. That's what my heart says. But if I had to put money on it, you know, I just wouldn't bet against Scottie Scheffler right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's nobody's ever going to be quite the same bet as Tiger Woods versus the field like he was in his time, right? Because in every event that he played in, it was like, okay, who do you – the bet was Tiger or the field. And Scottie isn't like quite like that, but almost – but almost.
He is. I mean, almost. You're right. I mean, he's about the closest thing that we've seen in a while, you know, to Tiger as far as the way he's just dominating, just playing, you know. So, yeah, I agree with you right there. He's not there yet, but he's about the closest we've seen in a while.
And it's weird because, I mean, the dude is like, you know, doing the Charleston with every swing, and I just don't understand how that footwork – kids creates that solid contact every time. It doesn't make sense to me, right? I mean, he's like, he's like doing really a soft shoe, ba-bow, you know?
Right, it really doesn't. You know, that right foot is all over the place, the left foot sometimes. But, man, he just hits the ball so dang solid, so good, you know. It just cracks me up to watch his footwork, though, because that's something that you wouldn't teach, you know, to a beginning golfer. This is what you would say not to do.
Right, you know? Right.
But for him, again, I think he owns it. That's his swing. And, man, it's done him well.
It really has. I mean, you know how they do the top tracer. With that swing, you would think that his top tracer would look like the McDonald's arches, just like boom. Like one going left, one going right, one going left, one going right. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Can't find it. But he does what he does, man. Scottie Scheffler, yeah, that's a good bet. Give me a bucket list course that you haven't played yet. Where do you want to play? You haven't played.
Oh man, well, Augusta being one of them, that goes without saying. Would love to play Augusta, and then for me, it would be over in Scotland and Ireland.
You've never been to Scotland, Ireland?
I've never been.
You've got to be kidding.
Michael, I wish I could say I have, but I have never been, and it's definitely on the bucket list.
Oh, baby. Okay, we'll talk. I think we have some things to talk about there, because I think I can make that happen for you. Beautiful.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we can do that. And I'm going to check my phone here real quick, because I saw... I know we switch to basketball right now because we have the March Madness coming up, the NCAA tournament. Do you follow college basketball during the season?
I do.
Beautiful. So you know of our seeds here. Do you agree with the top four seedings? The where we got there. Who do you have? Who do you pick for a winner? You got a winner? You picking a winner? Who's topping out your bracket?
You know what? I got Houston this year.
Really?
I do. I mean, I like UConn. I don't think Purdue will get to the Sweet 16. But, man, Houston, because of the way they defend every single night, and the kid Shedd is such a heck of a point guard and a leader. I mean, defensive player of the year, you know, in that conference. You know, I just think Houston's, you know, they're seasoned and ready. I think last year being eliminated as early as they were eliminated last year probably surprised them, but I think it makes them hungrier for this year. And then you got UConn, the defending champions.
Yeah.
Extremely well coached, you know, athletes all over the place. They can play any style of basketball. But I think if those two teams meet, it would be very interesting. But I'm going to go with Houston this year. I just think that they're going to – the firepower that they have and the way they guard people on a night-to-night basis, I really like them this year. The thing I love about the March Madness is the parity is unbelievable, and then any given night, somebody can get beat. That's what makes it so fun to watch. And these guys play with such passion, you know, because they know one game, you know, one bad game, and they could be out of the tournament. So it's always a good watch, and it's fun, especially for me being a basketball, you know, junkie. It's always fun to watch these kids play with so much, you know, enthusiasm and so much passion and so much heart.
So I'm going to run through this list because I saw Stephen A. the other day. And Stephen A. had this list of the... I want you to validate this for me. Stephen A. had the all-time... Stephen A.'s A-list, all-time most exciting college basketball players. Okay? So I'm going to read you this list because I tweeted my brother. I didn't tweet. I texted my brother after he did. I took a picture of his list. And the note that I texted my brother was, most trash list ever. And I just want to read this to you. Not all of them. I mean, they're not bad players, but I think the list is flawed. Anyway, all-time most exciting college basketball players. At number 5, Allen Iverson. Number 4, Chris Jackson. At the time, he was Chris Jackson. Number 3, Michael Jordan. Number 2, Kenny Anderson. Number 1, Pearl Washington. This is the top 5 all-time most exciting college basketball players. Does that make any sense to you?
No, it don't. I don't see how you got Pearl Washington, Kenny Anderson as number 1 and 2. No disrespect to neither one of those guys, because I was a big Kenny Anderson fan, you know, back in the day. And Pearl Washington was, you know, New York legend, you know, in the hood. But I don't think he was that exciting to me at Syracuse. No, I don't buy that list. I mean, Allen Iverson, yes. Michael Jordan, yes. Chris Jackson at the time, yes, pretty exciting basketball player on the collegiate level. But, you know, those three, you could probably have them, you know, 2 out of 3 of those guys would probably be on that list. But, you know, I just don't see Pearl and Kenny on that list as the number 1 and 2 most exciting college players ever.
I mean, and Michael Jordan wasn't even the most exciting player on his team at that time, right? I mean, because you had the aforementioned James Worthy. Come on, man. I mean, it's like, come on. It doesn't make any sense. Look, off the top of my head, it's like, did he not see two of the most exciting players play in the same season and meet in the finals, which would be Magic Johnson and Larry Bird? Had you never heard of him? Okay. And he's old enough to have seen David Thompson, who I think he's either 1 or 2 on the best college basketball players of all time.
You know what? That's a good name. That's a really good name to pull up. And like you said, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, that game, the ratings on that game is still one of the best ever.
Right. Right. They got Super Bowl ratings for a college basketball game.
You know what I'm saying? And that was 40 years ago, you know, more than that. And that's still one of the most watched games ever. And so imagine, like you said, in 2 years that he was at Michigan State, if he wasn't one of the top 5 most exciting players, and then you watch Larry Bird, you know, from where Indiana State came from, yeah, I don't see how those two guys are off the list.
Before I put Pearl Washington on, I go Daryl Griffith, Dr. Duncanstein. I put him on.
A name I would put on there as well is Clyde Drexler. If you saw Clyde Drexler,
baby,
whatever they called themselves. I mean, they were, you know, that team was pretty good with Clyde on there.
He was doing like Jordan imitation, like in Matrix time, which would just be all slow, and all of a sudden it's like, what? Yeah. Where is this? What is coming with this? How about Patrick Ewing, who was just like this athletic dude, this 7'1" dude running from half court, blocking shots one way, grab the rebound and dunk on the other. Man, I mean, I honestly just wanted some confirmation that this is maybe the most trash list in the history of trash and lists.
Yeah, I got to give you a thumbs up on that one.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Good. I'm going to go take my meds now. I'm all right. Okay. I'm good. And no, as I always finish with you, because this is not our first rodeo, you know, I always like to finish with you talking about your NBA and your all-time top 5 because, you know, I think it's an extraordinary era in the NBA. We are seeing physical talent, physical abilities and bodies. Actually, it seems like there's almost like evolution going on, the type of bodies that we're seeing when we see Victor Wembanyama. This 7'14" guy who's out there, you know, playing point guard at times. And then you have Zion Williamson, who is just this huge body. It's like a defensive tackle that defies gravity. And Anthony Edwards shows up every other night with these plays that are like, okay, so apparently the laws of gravity do not apply to him. You know, it's just, you see these guys and what they're doing. I mean, then you go Luka Doncic and, you know, and on and on and on. All these guys can do it. But again, we look over the history of time, the scope of the NBA. You've seen so much of it. I always like to go to you for a perspective. Still, if you can pick a top five, your starting top five, who's your starting top five all time?
Oh, man. My starting top five would be Magic at the one, Michael Jordan at the two, Tim Duncan at the four, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at the five, and I would say LeBron James at the three.
I think that team is unbeatable. I think I would pick. You pick, and I'm sure we didn't talk over this. People in the back of the tent, I just want you to know, I'm turning around and talking to you. We did not pick this before. That is exactly my five. That would exactly be my five.
Wow. I mean, that five, like you said, is you can't beat them. You can't beat them.
You can't beat them. And to me, of that five, I know a lot of people pick Jordan. A lot of people pick LeBron. I know you still feel, if I'm not mistaken, that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the best brother that ever picked up a basketball.
I do. I still think Kareem is the greatest of all time. But my conversation now is a little bit more like, man, but, you know, MJ, what he was able to accomplish, what LeBron has been able to accomplish.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a 1A, B, and C, you know, those three guys are probably going to be changeable on a lot of people's list. And, you know, this is my list. And my list is a little biased because I played with Kareem. And I saw how dominant he was. Now, if we're going by eras, then that's a different thing, you know, because Michael Jordan dominated his era just like Kareem dominated his era, just like LeBron is dominating his era. So, if I have to pick the greatest of all time based on the history and of the game of basketball and what he's able to accomplish, not only in the professional ranks but in the collegiate ranks and in the hype, I think Kareem is the greatest that ever picked up a basketball.
Yeah, he accomplished so much from beginning to end. And then you think about the what ifs. If he had had 3 years, all the college records he would hold, if he could dunk, all the pro records he would hold if he didn't have to play 4 years of college. You know,
exactly. He could have came straight out of high school like he could have back then, you know, with the way he was dominating in high school. Just think if he had those rules in place where he could have came straight out of high school, straight to the NBA, or like you said, went to UCLA for 1 year and then went to the NBA, you know, the type of numbers that he would have been able to put up probably would have been untouchable.
I totally agree with that. But and of that five though that you mentioned, my number one draft choice is and always will be Irvin Magic Johnson, because I believe the man would have been a Hall of Famer at any of the numbered positions, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You could put him any one of those, and he would have performed at a Hall of Fame level over his career. I
agree with you 100%, and it was proven when they had to play him at center to start the game against Philly in the NBA Finals, and he ended up with 42 points, 17 rebounds.
17 rebounds. Against the Hall of Fame center, Moses Malone.
Absolutely. So you can't tell me that, you know, Magic wouldn't have been, you know, one of the greatest. It still is, though, one of the greatest. He's, to me, still the greatest point guard that ever played the game. But, you know, look at a guy, like you said, if you want to build a team or start a team with, you know, it's going to be hard not to pick him because of the fact that he could play damn near every position.
And the leadership and the attitude and what he brings to, what he brings to the table all day, every day. Now, he's in D.C. now, being a part of the NFL franchise here. So maybe we can find a way to get him out on a golf course out here. What do you think?
No, that ain't gonna happen.
No.
No, that ain't happening. I love my boy, but I've seen him years ago pick up a golf club at a tournament. He swung it, and he ain't picked up a club since. He's like, nope, this game ain't for me. And he's been true to that, too. He's been true to that. He's like, nope, and he ain't never tried it since. So getting him on the golf course ain't happening.
He's not trying to hurt nobody, right? Beautiful. Okay, I'll give it to him. I'll let him know still. He's my first round draft choice all time. That brother is just, he's just special. As are you, my friend. Beats, thank you so much for doing this, man. As I said, thank you so much for being the first guest here in the tent. This is special for us. This is special for golfers who are people of color. The recognition that we're finally getting that a little bit in the game for what we bring to the game, in terms of financially, in terms of culturally, all of it, to find our place in the game through African American Golfers Digest, which has done so much. But people like you, players like you, mean so much to the game. You mean so much to me. And I couldn't be more grateful to you for taking the time to do this thing today.
Michael, it's always a pleasure talking to you, my brother. Like we said before, it's been way too long. We got to get out here on that golf course and have some more fun. So I'm looking forward to that as well. And thank you so much for having me as your first guest. I really appreciate that. And I'm honored by that. And you know me, I got nothing but love for you anyway.
Oh, first of many, my brother. First of many. Heal up good, okay? Because I'm going to take your money, son. All right.
Yes, sir. Sounds good. Sound like a game plan to me.
My man. All right. Be good, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
That is the great Byron Scott of Los Angeles Laker. Just a special guy. You know, when you meet him, I mean, you hear how we talk and we hear how we interact. But I have been there and see it. That's how he is with everybody. And that's, I think, what's so special about some people. You know, they are certainly celebrities and certainly have accomplished a lot and have, you know, somewhat justification if they want to separate themselves or that sort of thing. But that's not who my man is. And he is a genuinely just friendly and engaging and he's a person who's very comfortable in his own skin. I call it that's what a man is. A man is comfortable with who he is, and he's more interested in making you comfortable in who you are than trying to make you feel something, some kind of way about who he is. And we need more of that in the world, I do believe. Yeah. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with more In the Tent. Michael Williams, African American Golfers Digest. See you in a minute. The Tent is also sponsored by Jim Beatty Golf Ventures. Jim Beatty Golf Ventures is proud to present the 4th Annual African American Golf Expo and Forum in Palm Beach County, Florida, August 24th through 27th. The expo is where people of all backgrounds meet to discuss the issues and celebrate the accomplishments of African Americans in the game and business of golf. There will be networking sessions, educational sessions, a golf scramble, exhibits, awards luncheon, and more. The people that make the game will be there, and you should be too. Sign up today to attend at www.aagolfexpo.com. That's www.aagolfexpo.com. We want to thank especially the great Byron Scott for spending some time with us. It's the first time and it won't be the last time you hear from B on this show. We look forward to just having him in to get more of his thoughts on golf, basketball, and anything else he wants to talk about. This show, of course, is brought to you by the African American Golfers Digest. You can go and subscribe and get your print or digital copy at AfricanAmericanGolfersDigest.com. That's easy enough, right? Look, it's been a joy. It's been a pleasure. First of many, thank you so much for joining. We'll be back very soon with another episode. Until then, go out and play some golf. And remember, it's all about the love of the game. But even more than that, it's the love of each other. I'm Michael Williams, African American Golfers Digest, The 10. Peace.